G'day fans. Before the podcast gets underway, I would just like to state that at the time of recording, Brew had yet to announce an 80th birthday issue. Since then, Brew have announced that they plan on publishing it before or around Father's Day. I've left our discussion in, as I think you'll make some good points. Enjoy.
G'day everyone and welcome to X-Band Chronicle Chamber episode 44. Can you believe it? Today we have the three musketeers in myself. Stephen, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me again.
That's good. And Dan, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for having me on and good to be here. Hello, everyone.
That is awesome. So today we have a lot of news to get through. For some of you, you might have read some of the articles and stuff that's been released on Chronicle Chamber website, which is then filtered through Facebook and everything else. But we will be getting into a lot of discussion about it and going into a little bit more in-depth, including some rather interesting topics, which I personally cannot wait to get back into. But we will stick to the run sheet. And yes, we do have a run sheet, even though it probably does not sound like it. So first of all, on our run sheet is the sad news that came out in the latest Free comic, which was about Peter Chapman's death. Now, did any of you guys know about Peter Chapman before that article?
Not really. It wasn't really at the start of my mind, no.
I didn't know that he died. I only even knew of him through, I think it must have been Jeremy McPherson's interview. Yes. On Chronicle Chamber.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that when we interviewed Jeremy. So if you, for those who don't know, or for those who came in late, Jeremy is one of the current day Free cover artists, and in that Free comic, Dudley quite tactfully handed the reins over to Jeremy to be able to share about Peter Chapman, which I thought was a very nice touch, seeing Peter Chapman was one of Jeremy's personal heroes and personal influence as well. So I thought that was a very good touch. What did you guys think about the article that Jeremy wrote? Did it kind of enlighten you about him as a person and about the huge career that he had with Free and stuff like that as well?
Yeah, I thought so. It was a good, interesting read, I thought.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't have named him as a Free cover artist before, before Jeremy sort of let us know that. And then the depth of it through this article was really interesting. It's just such a shame that for so long, Free never acknowledged the cover artists, and we'll never know which issues were Peter's and, have that properly attributed.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think he mainly did some of Free's other titles, like, the Phantom Ranger and some of these other titles that Free did carry back in the heyday. But from what Jeremy, trying to go back to my memory, from what Jeremy did say, that he did actually do some Phantom ones as well. So I thought that was rather good.
Was it The Shadow? Was that part of Brew as well?
Yes. Sir Shadow or something. Yeah.
And I was just pleased to see, too, that Peter had such a great career working out of, quite remote locations, really. Narrabri and is the middle of New South Wales, basically. So to be able to contribute to the comic book scene when you're not necessarily geographically right in the middle of it, especially pre-internet days and that sort of thing, pretty impressive.
Yeah, and also the fact that he's able to pass the baton on as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably one of the most important things. And I know in talking to some younger artists like Jeremy, but also Jamie as well, Jamie Johnson, who was on one of who interviewed in the podcast from the Supernova Day, he also was, not heavily influenced by Peter Chapman in this case, but he has had the previous generation helping him, go on with his career as well. So it's good to see. And in the typical Phantom fashion, it's good to see the generational thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Passing of the baton.
So on a similar note, when we were talking about that, as some of yous may know, Sal Velluto, who has been the artist from Egmont for the last 10, 15 years, but also more recently with Herms, with his 6-part series that came out over about an 18-month to 2-year period. He has been rather sick. So I must admit, I'm unsure if the sickness kind of played any part in the delay of the comics. But for those who don't know, he has been rather sick, and there has been several fundraiser initiatives which are helping raise some of the costs to be able to cover for treatment and stuff. For those who don't know, hospital bills are a little bit set up a little bit different in the US than the way they are in Australia, where if you get sick, a lot of the times you have to pay the bill yourself. They don't really have a public healthcare system.
Not at
So
all.
have you guys put in any money or put a bid on that other fundraiser item?
Well, I really liked the fundraiser that was being run by Eric Von
Eric, yeah.
D. Which is some of Sal's original art. So I certainly threw a couple of bids into that. If you're listening, please don't bid 15.25. That's mine. That's my unique low bid, so just stay away from it. If it goes for less than that, I'll be a bit annoyed. But that may well have ended by the time we get the podcast out. But there's got the, if you go to Sal's, any of Sal's social media, there's links on how to contribute there. So it's even no for someone who's given us so much joy, and he, for mine, he's one of the greater modern day artists. We need to keep him around us for as long as we can. So chip in, everyone.
Yeah, coming for Forcus, it's pretty high praise.
Well, it made me feel guilty for not doing anything.
Well, now we can do what, 15.24?
They've got to go in 25-cent increments, I think. So.
I must admit, I think it's a great idea, but I did find that whole bidding process a little bit confusing. But I guess the good way of doing it is that it allows people not with the biggest pocket to win, but it kind of makes it a bit more of an even chance for anyone to win. So yeah. So talking about Sal Velluto, have any of you guys been reading his latest blog articles about his adventures doing the Herms of the Herms series?
I've been meaning to. I thought they looked interesting, but I haven't had the time this week, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. I read the starter and, click here for more and didn't quite get to the click here. So I've certainly been meaning to, but once we get back to school, we're pretty busy, aren't we, Stephen?
That's right. But yeah, back to the nine. Well, everyone thinks it's just 9 to 3, but the hours are a bit longer than that.
Well, what is it, 8:30 to 3?
Oh, sometimes I go all the way to 3:15, so Have you been reading him, Jim?
It's kind of good in the sense that you don't have to read them as soon as they come out, so you're not really missing out on much. And it's like he's created the whole story, and then he's like split them up into chapters. So it's good to kind of like read them from the beginning to the end, because you don't get the waiting for the next part. But so far it's nothing out of the ordinary. But I'm looking forward to hear what he has to say about the delay, because from what most people have commented, the biggest issue with the comics has been the delay. So I'll be interested to see what he has to say about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I really enjoyed the series, as I've said before on the podcast, but it did get very frustrating waiting months at a time for the next issue, to the point where, I started just putting them away and thinking, oh well, I'll read the whole lot when the last one comes out.
So this part of news has to be about the interesting but rather exciting announcement that there is a new Mandrake film about to be released. What do you guys think about
Or about to get started. I don't know about release just yet.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
think you might have oversold that a little bit there. There's speculation that maybe at some point in the distant future there may well be a Mandrake film, and this guy might star in it. So I
So
think Venom fans know not to get their hopes up too quickly about King Features movies, perhaps.
is it really still that early days, or is it, or have they already like chosen it and then they're just doing the final touches to the script?
I thought the yeah well they've got Sacha Baron what's his surname, Carter or Cohen?
Cohen.
Cohen, to be Mandrake, and yeah, I thought yeah they're up to either they've written a script or that, or like you said, they're redrafting it or putting some finishing touches to it,
Well, I
but
suppose you don't sign a actor and then release that news without being relatively close to filming, I would hope. So,
yeah. Good
yeah,
point.
I hope that they're at the point where they're about to start filming, and I think every Phantom fan's got their fingers crossed, because a Mandrake film could lead in directions we all hope it might. So.
Yeah. So a question. Why do you think they've gone a Mandrake film, which is a fairly obs more obscure character than, say, the Phantom or even a Flash Gordon? Why do you think they've gone a Mandrake film rather than one of those two?
I reckon maybe that they're hoping that the Doctor Strange film goes well, and it might be riding on the coattails a little
Yeah, pun intended.
bit. When does the Doctor Strange film, when's it due?
Oh, mate, this would be a Joe
That
question.
is a joke question, yeah. He'd be all
Yeah.
over that like a rash. November 4, 2016. So this year.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, I think that hadn't even occurred to me, Stephen. I think that's a really interesting point. Maybe they are hoping that that character goes well. Doctor Strange is Marvel, is he, or DC?
Marvel.
Marvel.
And they've been going really well, really popular films, and are really. I think I read somewhere that they're one of the top two or three franchises of all time, just about now. So, if we can, if we, I say, if us King Features fans can. Come in on the back of that, that'd be really good.
Yeah, so I guess probably the thing that gets me most excited as a Phantom fan, not a Mandrake fan, is the fact that maybe they could do kind of like what DC and Marvel and have done successfully in the last couple of years by introducing, another character like at the end as like a guest star or something like that.
That would be a great way to do it, I think. And do
And
you
what?
think that they'd take Defenders of the Earth or go King's Watch or King's Quest or just do something completely different?
I reckon they're probably, if it is to happen, I reckon they're probably better off to do similar as what Marvel has done, where you do like a movie for both, for both of them. So let's just say
Yeah.
the original three
Build the characters.
Defenders of the, which builds the characters, and then the movie ties into a team up movie. I think that is the best way of doing it. But to be truthfully honest, I think whatever, I just need to do it.
Oh yeah. Oh, of course I need to do it. I think my to answer your question, I think it'd probably be a Defenders of the Earth scenario, only because more people would know about
Yeah,
that,
true.
that it had the cartoon series. And that's not to say that the movie would have to reflect the cartoons in any way. And I certainly don't think that they well, I wouldn't have thought that they'd start bringing in the children of those characters than the way that that cartoon series did. But it
but
would probably be called
was,
Defenders, you know.
Mm.
Defenders of the Earth was very popular as well. I think we kind of undersell just how popular it was. You know, it did, what, 66 episodes, which, you know, has to be fairly popular to get that much.
Yep.
And, you know, the prices for the merchandise is still quite high these days after, you know, almost 40 years.
Yep.
So, and most people, you know, like, I remember, you know, buying the King's Quest and stuff like that, and people were, you know, the comic book stores, or my comic book store, was actually selling it as a Defenders of the Earth remake.
Yeah.
Were they?
You know, it's, you know, it was kind of like, here's the remake of Defenders of the Earth, and then people were going, you know, message, you know, I saw messages on the Facebook like, is there a new Defenders of the Earth comic or something like that? So I think people, especially our age and maybe even a little bit older to, like, you know, the 40s and stuff like that, I think they know what the Defenders of the Earth. Sorry about that, guys. A little bit of a technical difficulties there. Dan, you wanted to say something about the choice of an actor for Mandrake. What did you have something to add about that?
Yeah, I was just curious as to your thoughts of Sacha Baron Cohen as Mandrake. There was a bit of to-ing and fro-ing on the various forums when that was announced. A lot of people not happy, but I don't know. I think it's actually a pretty good choice myself. When you look at him next to pictures of Mandrake, you know, by the time he grows the mustache and puts the top hat on, I think he'll settle in. He'll look the part. Whether he'll act the part, I guess, is the question.
And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people know him from his comedy, and especially his you know, things like Borat or Ali G and stuff. But he's also done some serious stuff as well, and I hope he, you know, can bring that serious stuff, but with a touch of humour.
That's exactly right. That dash of humour.
Mm.
Yeah, I must admit, I haven't seen any of those movies. So I kind of don't really know who he is from that point of view that everyone's worried about. So it doesn't really bother me either way, personally.
I suppose the only thing you could say is that your Borats and your Ali G's, he's very much an illusionist in the what he does. He's does a lot of mockumentaries and pretends to be someone else and takes that to the streets, sort of thing. So if he can carry off those illusions, perhaps he can gesture hypnotically and convince us all on the screen.
Well done. Did you ever see his earlier stuff as these TV shows, Ali G?
And oh, yeah, they were funny.
That was hilarious, and people just had no idea how to take him. It was brilliant.
No, that's right.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. No, so I have a bit of hope. As I said, I really hope that this film goes through and gets made. Whether, you know, I don't think any of us would expect it to be as successful as, you know, Civil War and Captain America and all of that sort of stuff. But if it gets enough traction, and maybe, you know, starting with the least known character in our particular franchise, and then builds up through Flash and Phantom and brings them all together, it can only be a positive thing.
Yeah, good point. Good point. So another thing we wanted to discuss about was about through a Supernova. Now, for those who don't know, Fru was at Supernova Sydney this year. Dan and Stephen weren't able to get away to it this year, but I was there. You will be able to listen to basically a little bit about it from my point of view on the podcast previously, but you just wanted to ask a question about it from my perspective.
Oh, well, I was, to begin with, I was just really excited with all of the new stuff that Fru brought out in association with Supernova. So the new cover, which we discussed in, actually you were probably away for that discussion in the last podcast. You're away. So we talked about the Jam cover. There was the slip folders for the replica series that I know you'll be displaying in pride of place on your bookshelf, Jermaine, just to get those replicas out in easy access so you can get to them all the time. And also
I'm reading
the
them
Folio
continuously.
series. The Folio series, which you know I put up on Facebook just yesterday or the day before, I certainly got a copy of, even though I wasn't able to get to Supernova. I made sure that I got one of those before they sold out, because I was just really impressed with the images and the new products that Fru's put out. So what did you think of the fact that Fru is putting out these things that they're certainly not known for over the last ever, you know?
Yeah, to be honest, I think it's a great thing. Now, everyone knows my opinions about the, I can't even say the word, the replica series. But I think the slipcase is a great idea. It's simple. It, you know,
did you get one?
It's cheap. Yeah, I got two, I think. I left one because they came flat. So I left one flat and then I built one up. But no, my replica series is not in it. and if you're out there and you're listening and you disagree with me with the replica series, you can actually tell me, you know, if you want, you can message me. There's no need for you to go out and create a fake Facebook profile to tell me what you think about it. I'm quite happy for people to disagree with what I think. So just, you know, he knows who he is. So just, you don't have to create a fake Facebook profile to let me know you disagree with me. It's okay. You don't have to agree on everything.
I hope it wasn't a fake.
But yeah, anyway.
And now he's going to get really angry with you. But...
yeah, I know. I had to say that. but no, and then with the prints as well, because there was two sets of prints which we've discussed, and you can see them all on Fru website and on our Chronicle Chamber website as well. The thing that I wanted to make the point about is Fru needs to get new readers. Now, we've discussed this at length in various podcasts before, and we probably will do it in the future as well. And to create new fans, you need today's next generation, they want more than just a comic book, whether it's a trade paperback, whether it's a set of prints or whatever. A lot of them don't just collect comic books, if that makes sense.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I go to my local comic book shop and, you know, yeah, they've got comics, they've got trade paperbacks, but then they've got, you know, the figurines, and then they've got those posters. You know those posters like you buy for 10, 15 bucks and they're rolled up and you stick them on your wall and stuff like that. You know, and then there's T-shirts and all that type of stuff sells like hotcakes. But it gets your name and your brand out there. So I think it's great for Fru to do stuff like that. And I think while it was good for them to do it via Supernova, they need to continue to do that, and it needs to get out into the comic book shops as well. Because that's where some of these new fans, which are going to help keep Fru stay alive, are going to come from. And probably the biggest disappointing thing that I noticed at Supernova was the fact that I was one of the youngest people there. Now, you know, where, you know, so at the Fru booth, I was one of the youngest people, but then if I go elsewhere, I'm still one of the youngest people. I'm more middle-aged or getting towards, you know, the old creepy people that are hanging around with young people.
I think we all would have heard at some stage that the Phantom is your grandfather's comic book hero or your father's comic book hero. We need to make it, you know, we're old folk
Everyone.
Now, you know, we need to make it the young people's comic book hero again. So I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly, and getting more merchandise out and seeing just the hero, the image of him out there a lot more has got to help.
Mm. Exactly.
I reckon the pop vinyls helped a lot as well.
Yes.
One of the latest
no doubt.
Issues I picked up, might have been part five of Nat Turner's Spirit, 1756. Actually, I picked that up from a different newsagent. And then I noticed that they had pop vinyls there, and I noticed the fan, and went and got talking to the person, and she said that they just run out the door. Those ones are one of the more popular. And she's actually, I didn't have a, I still don't have a blue suited one. And, she said she's got those on back order, you know, that, so they're still quite popular, and I don't know if it's with Phantom fans or with pop vinyl collectors, but you know, having that type of merchandise out there is being seen and is being bought. So to put so having these prints and whatever and advertising it in the comic, that's great, and online is great, but we know where to find that. You know, we're already fans. We're already buying the comic. We're already checking out the website every now and then. If we if they're able to get it out into the shops, that then that's how you're going to get the new fans in, the ones who aren't seeing it like we are.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And because some of those images are very amazing, because like I think, Dan, it was you that was talking about how your son was like, oh, I want that one to be hanged up in my room.
And yeah, that's right. My daughter's got one, and he's already picked out which one's going in his room.
Which one's he got?
Yeah, and
The Paul Ryan that they used for the centerfold in the color issue. He's he picked that, and I was pretty disappointed because that was supposed to go in my skull cove, but he's got it for his room. So I'm disappointed to a point, but I know that she's got. From the second poster set, the one with the blue Phantom label and the Phantom peering through the jungle, because she's got a bit of a blue theme to her room, so she wanted the bluer Phantom poster. So,
is that the one with the waterfall in the background?
Sorry?
Is that the one with the waterfall in the background?
Oh, no, no, no. She, from the second poster set, the one that came out probably 12 months ago.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, so, look, I was disappointed that those aren't hanging in my room, but the fact that they're hanging in the kids' rooms means that they're going to have the Phantom looking at them and looking over them for, you know, their childhood, and it's going to be always something, a character that's meaningful to them. And the more kids' bedrooms that we can get those hanging in, you know, unfortunately we can't go around sneaking into kids' rooms pinning up posters. We need to get them buying them for themselves. So, so Stephen, you're absolutely right. The more shops that we can, and the more public areas that we can get this character into, through and Icon and all the rest of it, the better off we'll all be for it.
Exactly. Like, yeah, and I think that's and the first step is being at a supernova where you've basically got free access to all these kids with their, you know, yearly pilgrimage out of their mum's basement.
I love and to see him,
the fact and that and I think actually, too,
like, if they could come down to the comic con down here down in Melbourne, yeah, make it a bit easier for us Victorians, or if there's one up in Queensland,
yes.
I don't know. So
up to Brisbane and up to the Gold Coast, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and so the West Coast has one too, don't they?
Oh, mate, why does everyone forget about WA? Now, WA props up the rest of Australia. You will always get neglected.
See, Stephen, that's what happens when you push, when you put 20 cents in and press go.
But no, you're right. They've created the products, or the beginning of these extra products. Now they can be at Supernova, and then, you know, going to the comic book shops, and then you've got the pop vinyls going to, you know, other places, and then if you chuck a movie or something like that into it as well, it could be the beginning, you know, it could be, you know, some people may think it's wishful thinking and all that, but you have to start somewhere, and this is where they've started. It's a great start. Now,
I think it's brilliant because it's a two-way street too. It's not just being at Supernova. It's not just being at Supernova and having people see them. It's also through, as a group of guys, going to Supernova and seeing what everyone else is doing and sort of going, oh, okay, so this is what we need to do to meet the market.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Exactly. Because I remember talking to Dudley, and it would have been gone in the podcast, where he said, you know, this is the first time he's ever been. You know, and most of the people that he has probably met with from a Phantom point of view before were the old Fuddy Duddies and the old Krusty Forkers. And so now, you know, you can see the next or the future generation of fans as well. And so you can see that there is a large untapped market.
One thing that I did think was interesting, and this is off Fru's Facebook page, and Dudley had posted up a couple of photos of the Fru booth and all the rest of it, which was great for people who weren't there. I did think it was interesting that on the background, in the background on the wall was some of Glenn Ford's fanfare posters. What's going on there, do you reckon, with fanfare stuff being sold at the Frew booth? There was talk of perhaps the covers from the Australian covers from the Hermes Press series, which had been organised through Phantom's Vault, being perhaps one of the folio collections that are coming. What's the collaboration between those three companies, do you think? Stephen, what did you think of those?
I don't mind them being up in the booth. We all know that Glenn and Renee and of course Dudley are running crew. They're the Frew crew, and they've also got their own little companies. And so I don't mind them taking up a little bit of wall space with their posters. My biggest concern though is more with Phantom's Vault. Now, was it last year or the year before, whenever the Hermes thing came out, there was an embargo on that Frew enforced. Mm. Now that, but then Phantom's Vault, found the back door and got them in. I'm just wondering now with the second Hermes series, will Frew put that embargo on again or, make sure it's enforced, and will Phantom's Vault go through the back door again, or will Hermes be free to go out into comic book shops?
And wasn't one of the last, maybe issue 6, issue 5 of Hermes advertised in Frew after all of that time? And I know that in Nat Turner's Spirit 4, there's issue 1754, there's the back page is advertising for those fanfare posters again. So it's interesting to see how that relationship between the three companies is evolving, given that the blokes who are involved in those three companies are all in Frew. It's
I think it's all good stuff, but we want to make sure. I don't know. Does there need to be separation, or does it just become one big conglomerate?
It's a good question, isn't it?
Okay. Now, first of all, for those who don't know, I have helped, and I do help Phantom's Vault and Fanfare with the websites, and I so I'm a little bit involved with them. So I just want to say that first of all. I think you're right that there has to be a separation. I think with the Frew booth being their first time they've ever done it, I think it makes sense having Fanfare and Phantom's Vault products being sold with Frew products, because I was there for a fair bit and I saw people buying a couple of posters, and then they went and brought a mug. Or then they went and brought a couple of back issues of Moonstone or of Herms or of Frew Comics. Them spending money on the Phantom is better than them spending money on Spider-Man or Pokemon or something like that. So I think from that point of view, it's good. I think they underestimated just how popular they were going to be. And I think in either conversation I've had with Dudley or in some communication via their Facebook and Frew Comics, they have discussed about getting a bigger booth next year. So I think if that happens, it will enable them to be able to separate the products a bit more, if that kind of makes sense. It would be hard because obviously you've got Renee and Glenn having fingers in a couple of different pies.
I think the concern, and Stephen sort of hinted at it there with the talk about the second series of Hermes Press, would be like on a much smaller scale, but it's kind of like if Coles and Woolies got together to buy Aldi, you know what I mean? And I'm certainly not at any stage accusing Renee or Glenn or Dudley of any, underhanded dealings, but there's a chance to, you've got complete control of the Phantom market. And we need to know that as consumers that we are still being looked after and still can get, that there's still competition that's out there, I suppose, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think now, like I said before, knowing a little bit about the goals of both Phantom's Vault and Fanfare, I feel like I can probably make this comment where If they're like their mission statements, like Fanfare's mission statement is creating products that no one else has ever created that Glenn or the fan has ever wanted, and then they're able to produce it and sell it. So they're kind of like creating new products that people have always said they wanted, i.e., like a glow and dark poster, you know.
Well,
So
I
that's
reckon that's a
an
good
example
thing,
there.
and I have no problems with them
Yeah.
advertising
And
through.
then with absolutely agree.
Fans Vault, from what I see, their kind of mission statement from having some dealings with them is that they kind of gather stuff from around the world that the average fan can't get hold of, and then be able to bring it into Australia so the Australian and also outside of Australia marketplace can buy it. So they're almost kind of like the middleman between a company in far-flung X country X. Fans Vault buys it, you know, buys a whole heap of stuff, brings it, and then is able to be able to give it to the average fan. A good example is the Norwegian Bubblehead. They were extremely hard to get a hold of 10, 15 years ago. You know, Renee was able to buy a whole heap, and you can now buy them for half the price than what I originally brought them. And it's a lot easier to be able to buy them now because he sourced them, brought them over, and then is able to sell them. So
And
I
that's
think,
exactly what he did with Hermes Press
yeah,
as well, isn't it?
exactly. So I think if.
And that's all good, but yeah, and that was a good idea with the Hermes Press at the start. But back then he wasn't in control of Fru, and now that he
Yeah.
is there some sort of conflict happening? Like, is he going to stop the flow of the comic going out to comic shops and letting them sell the
Yes.
thing,
To
or
control
is he going
the
to
distribution.
yeah. That's my only
Yeah.
concern.
I don't I understand your concern, and I don't think you're the only one, and I have similar concerns myself. But where I'm not so concerned is the fact that I think Fru produces comic books to the Australian and New Zealand market, where and they're kind of until they are able to get into other markets like India, South Pacific, and you know, and able to distribute not only comics but maybe trade paperbacks, you know, maybe merchandise like T-shirts and posters and all that type of stuff. Until that happens, Fans Vault is going to be able to provide that for the fans and fan, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I'd
But
just like to think, and I think it's
yeah.
been, I think it's been, I would hope that it's been recognised from here that something like Hermes Press, that's not a threat to Fru in any way, shape, or
Yes.
form. If anything, it's only going to bolster Fru's market because it does go into the comic book stores. Comic book nerds who aren't Phantom fans go into those. They'll see it. You know, they're still up on shelves now. They might pick up a few copies and go, "Wow, that's right, the Phantom." I'll go and get the latest Fru out of the newsagent, or maybe even Fru could be distributing into comic book stores. So I think it can only help Fru to have more Hermes Press out there, given that
Yeah.
it's only a small, you know, those small 6-part series. It's not like they're putting out a comic every 2 weeks. They're not
Yeah.
competition for Fru. They can be, you know, they can complement each other.
Yes. Now, we did, when this the whole hoo-ha began over 2 years ago, we said exactly the same thing as what you said. I think the thing is that which I think needs to be taken into account is that Hermes only has a license to distribute in North America and Canada. So technically, they
Okay.
can't actually ship their comics to the Perth comic book store, to the Queensland comic book stores and stuff like that, because technically, that's going to be breaching the contract. The contract may have changed, but that was what the contract issue was with the first series. Now, this is where Phantom's Vault can and be a good loophole, and this is what has happened. And I know there has been some comic book stores that have actually brought their comics through Phantom's Vault and then distributed it to their fans on their books. Doors and stuff like that. So it's almost like Fans Vault was able to be able to do a diamond situation where they were the distributors instead of going through Diamond, which went through Herm. So I think it's definitely a watch this space. I think with the more products out there, and I think there can be some cross-platform advertising. Like, I don't have a problem with Fru advertising a Fan's Vault website or a Fanfare website, because they've done it with Bradford Exchange, they've done it with Icon Stage, the Icon stuff, they've done it with Casual Friday's website and stuff like that. So I don't think there's a problem with that. So that's what I think anyway. I think at times it can probably be a little bit murky where the lines are, but I think the average fan will not give us stuff. They just want more stuff. Now, we, in a sense, are not paid, but we're expected to dig and to look into things and, speculate and ask the questions, because that's why people listen to us. So I think, for people like us, it's great to talk about, but for the average fan, I don't really think they care.
No, they don't, and I think that's well, that's probably evident in the fact that none of this has been discussed on the Facebook. And what's far more compelling for people is the question about colour frus, and should we have colour frus? Should we not have colour frus? That's far more in the front of people's minds than any speculation about advertising costs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, great little segue there, but has there? I must admit, I've been a little bit underwhelmed with the response from Phantom fans that obviously on Facebook and stuff, where that question has been asked, whether they want colour and stuff. What do you guys reckon?
I'm of the view that for special occasions, I think it works. I don't know. For every issue, I don't know. Maybe I've just grown accustomed to the black and white. But yeah, I think there's been a few people say that for special occasions it'll be good, or always do the Sundays or dailies in colour like we see them in the newspaper. Well, I'm hit and miss with that one. I'm not really all that fast. But yeah, if they do like a quarterly color comic or something like that, maybe that could be all right. Because of course you get the price will be there'll be a price increase, and I think Dudley went on when you interviewed him back at Supernova said $5. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think it would be about five.
Which wouldn't break the bank, and it will still be a 36 page issue, so you're still getting more pages than you get. Oh, for example, with King's Quest, like my last issue cost me, I don't know, $8, I think, at the shop, and it's 22 pages long. So I still think getting a very good deal. But does the comic work as well in color as it does in black and white? Now, so we look at the Scandinavian comic, like. Apparently, did it used to be in black and white, now it's in colour. How are their
Yeah,
sales
that's
have
correct, yeah.
effect, and Australia, we've had black and white since day dot, haven't we? So, though, we can think about being modernists and what have you, we have, I think, a lot of us have grown accustomed to the black and white. So.
I'd agree completely with you there, Stephen, in terms of the amount of time. You said quarterly. I was thinking, as you said that, just before you said that, I was thinking, oh, maybe three or four issues a year in colour. I think one of the great things that's happened to Fru over the last couple of years, even before Renee and Glenn took over, when Steve Shepherd first came in, there was a bit more excitement about what the next few issues going to be looking like. Like Steve Shepherd brought in more vibrant colours, and he tried that two-tone strip for a little while, which I certainly didn't like, but it was something new, it was something different. And then, of course, this year with Glenn and Renee, almost every issue of Fru, there's something new and exciting going on. And I think to maintain that, you have that once every 3 months, a colour issue comes out, and that generates a bit of buzz and a bit of excitement about, oh, that's the colour issue. We've got to make sure we go and get that one or whatever. I like you, I don't think I would like to see it in colour every issue. We talked on the last podcast about the Nat Turner Spirit story and how that worked so effectively in black and white. And I think some artists are going to, stack up in black and white better than in colour, or certainly in a different way. So to make sure to make to maintain that excitement of the colour issue coming out and still, you know, supporting those artists that look good in black and white. I think that balance, yeah, as I say, I agree with you, 3 or 4 issues a year in colour, that's the way to go.
Yeah, and you could even go like, so let's just say you're doing an annual. Yeah, you wouldn't have to do the whole story in colour. You could do maybe like a daily story or a Sunday. You know, let's just say you've got an annual and there's 4 Sundays in there. You could maybe do one of them in colour. So that way you can kind of judge the reaction as well. I think you're right. Like, I think I'll probably have to echo those thoughts that I would like to see not every issue in colour, but I would like to see some. Because to do every colour, to do every issue in colour, obviously the dailies and Sundays you get from the newspaper strips are already in colour and the Phantom is purple, so that's all good. But the stories you get from Egmont, while they're in colour, the Phantom's blue. Now,
we don't want that. You know, that's not an Australian Phantom.
No, exactly. And so you would have to recolour, which does take time. And, you know, does take time to recolour every single panel. And it's all right for some stories. Yeah, exactly. Well, time is cost. So do you hire an artist or a colourist to do that? Does Glenn do it, which means he can't do other stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's time which equals money and stuff for every single issue. And they're already, you know, doing 31 issues, 31 plus issues a year. Well, does that mean there needs to be a quicker turnaround, which means translation may drop, you know, and the translation and the English issues may drop down because they're spending more time changing a Phantom from blue to purple. Can, you know, if Glenn's doing all that colouring, can he not spend as much time on doing a cover for that story? So, you know, I think you kind of have to take it into context as well. So I think a couple a year is best, in my opinion. But I would like to see a couple a year. I reckon that would be good.
You raise a good point there about the translation. If I had to choose between something that's translated well and a colour comic, I'm going to go for the translation. That's been one of my bugbears every time. You know, well, the Kane one that we had a couple of weeks ago, and just, you know, every now and then, and this is probably more so last year or the year before, you know, what they were saying is correct English, but it's not really familiar English, if you get my drift.
Yeah, well, no one would ever actually put a sentence together that way if they were just going to say something.
Yeah.
Probably the best, because I think we're all in agreement there, and we seem to be echoing what Dudley said to Jermaine at Supernova. Probably the best balance they could possibly come up with is just keep them all in black and white, but issue some fru crayons from time to time so people can colour them in as they see fit themselves.
Yeah, you like that little joke by Glenn, did you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought he was absolutely on the money there.
No.
Save him time.
I think if you... but I think if you do both, it will kind of keep... It will keep the crusty old traditionalists happy, but it will also keep the people that are crying out for colour happy as well.
And no, I think it would genuinely generate some buzz around, and it might even be best not to have a particular schedule where you go, oh, it's you know, it's the start of the financial year, therefore the next one's going to be a fan. Just sporadically sprinkle them through, you know, maybe it's 3 issues, 3 black and white, then a colour, and then there's 6 black and white, then a colour, and, you know, they just pop up from time to time unexpectedly, and, you know, we're all on Facebook and the social media buzz, oh god, the latest Phantom's the colour one, make sure you get out and get it, this sort of thing. So
I reckon we can get the fans from trending on top 10 trending topics, huh?
Oh, no doubt, mate. Hashtag Colour Phantom. It'll go.
I don't think it will be as popular as hashtag Free Kick Hawthorn.
Oh, get out of it. Whenever you're on top, people want to bring you down.
Okay, so moving on. The other interesting thing that we did break on the interview with Dudley and Glenn was the fact that they are going to do colouring in books. Now, do any of you guys are any of you guys in that current craze of adult colouring in books?
Absolutely not. No way.
I once had to take an art cover at work, and yeah, she had photocopied or gotten from somewhere, you know, those sort of things, and it was just a warm down activity after they've done everything else. And I just sat there and, you know, had my sheet there, and I'm making different colours. Oh yeah, that comes up good. But no, I don't own any myself.
Yeah. I think if they're going to do it, okay. Sorry, Jim.
Oh, I was just going to say, my wife brought a set of them and a colouring in book. I think she did like a quarter of a page, and she just thought, I could think of better things to do with my time.
Yeah. Oh, look, there are people who certainly say it's meditative and, you know, a stress relief and all the rest of it. And I fully respect that if that's your thing. Get into it. But it's not my thing. I think that I think if they're going to do it.
Would your kids like it, though?
That's the point. Yes, absolutely, my kids like it. All three of my kids love doing their colouring in, and they do find it a meditative and a stress relief. I think if Fru come out and
do they find it meditating and stress relief, or does the parents find it meditating and
stress relief? It works both ways,
5 minutes.
A little from column A and a little from column B. It works quite well.
And you have to think, will they be aiming them for adults, or will they be like an all-ages thing? Like I was in a
I hope they're an all...
Yeah.
I would hope that they're aimed at like your 8-year-old sort of thing. So it's got to be for the kids. We're talking about getting the kids involved. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. I was in a bookshop a little while ago, and I saw, you know, their coloring in book section, and there was a comics based one. It looked like different covers from, you know, different comics. Nothing like Batman or Superman. No, nothing licensed like that. But it looked like they could have been comics, but, you know, 50, 60 years ago. And so, that's an interesting concept. And then, yeah, hearing about Fru, and if they do, like, covers from their books, and having those as the outline to colour in, that'd be good. Or, you know, certain frames from stories, that'd be the way to go, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if Fru come out with colouring in books that are aimed at that, you know, as I say, 8 to 12 year old type market, I know I'll buy 4. You know, one for me, one to put in storage, and a couple for the kids that they can colour in and make their own artworks, and, you know, maybe have perforated edges so the kids can tear them out and stick them up on the wall once they're done and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at, like, I've got the latest issues here from, you know, our last podcast. You know, just about any of those covers would work as a, colouring in page, and, you know, look inside and seeing the posters, you know, that they could work as well. So, they've got plenty of, resources available to them. And of course, with Glenn being the resident artist, he's no slouch either. He'd know what would work as well. So, I think it's a good idea, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think, yeah, I echo all of your thoughts. I think it's just another product out there. I think it'll be great.
So, in terms of things for kids, I couldn't help but notice as I was reading through the Phantom Forum 1756, one of the Dudley's replies, he actually mentions not colouring in book for kids. He says in here, where is it, page 33 here, we have been thinking about developing a Phantom story, especially for kids, so keep your eyes open for that. I really hope that they do that, because Nat Turner's spirit, as much as we enjoyed it, and we said that on the last podcast, that's not necessarily going to be accessible when I sit down to read it as a bedtime story to my 7-year-old, you know.
Not unless they want to give them nightmares.
No, that's exactly right. We've been really enjoying the free comic book series that Hermes Press has put out. You know, they're nice, short little stories that he can understand. You know, sometimes they take a little bit of explaining, but he can access them. I think some sort of story that's just for kids or aimed at kids, that can only be a winner as well. So I know that's a little throwaway comment in a forum letter, but I hope that there's something behind that and they're going through with that.
I thought it was interesting that it said the developing stories, because haven't Egmont already done something like this? So are they developing, or are they just in the process of getting them from Egmont? You got any word on that domain?
That's a good question. I would like to see him actually do both. At the dinner at the Leaf Fork Memorial Bengals Explorers Club, they did mention and some of their future ideas, and this was one of them. Now, I'm not going to say exactly what was said at the dinner because it was we were asked not to repeat it and we were asked not to record it and put it on the podcast, but it looks like Dudley has kind of snuck a little bit of it out. But I would like to see both. I would like to see the Egmont stories of Kit and Heloise now, or in the, you know, they're kind of like now and in the past as early teenagers, where the impression I got from the Fru letter was that it may even be the 21st Phantom as a child or something like that. So I think it would be good. And talking to Andreas Erickson, who is a friend of us and who is the stand-in editor of Egmont, they have found that there has been a slight increase of the younger generational readers with the Egmont kids. So I reckon we may even see something similar if Fru goes ahead with that.
I think as long as the plot lines and the themes in it are young person friendly, so yes, that, you know, they can access the story and they can sit down and read a comic for themselves and know what's going on without you know, turning to me and going, oh, so what exactly was the situation with the slaves in Civil War America, Dad? What's going on there? And, you know, you've got to give them that whole historical background and all the rest of it, so.
I don't think it would be something like that. If you're aiming it for kids, you're not going to get a heavy historical event like that. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be probably he goes down, goes into the jungle and he gets attacked by a python, so he fights the python and the python goes off, or, you know, he helps an animal who's injured and nurses it back to health, and then he, you know, lets it go. And, you know, it's going to be stuff like that that a kid can read.
Heaven forbid we go back to some of the Great Leaf Orc stories where those are exactly the sorts of things that happened, and, you know, oh, he rescues a young person in the middle of the jungle and it turns out that he's an orphan of a prince or whatever and gets him back home. I think maybe we go back to those Leaf Orc themes.
So you're saying that, what, Wilson McCoy's artwork was childish?
No, absolutely not. No. I think that the storylines are more accessible. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you use those storylines as the basis for a new story.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
Would these stories be part of the Fru comic, like we have now with two stories per comic, or will they be a standalone publication? And, like, I'm thinking if they're a standalone, would they be like a full comic size, or would they be like those half-size books that you see, like at Target or Safeway or wherever?
Those little digest-type things.
Yeah, at the register.
I think that's what it would be, and I think... You know how they're in plastic and then they have like a giveaway, whether it's a sticker or, you know, now big kids like stuff like that, but the little kids like that as well, whether it's a little, you know, like a little ring or something that comes with it. And, you know, and then when they progress from something like that, they can then read the bigger comics or the more adult comics, like a Fru comic and stuff like that.
Hearing you say that makes me almost hope they don't do it, because I'm going to go broke, because if one of those comes out, I'm going to have to buy two, one that I can keep in the plastic for myself and one that the kids can open and enjoy.
No, you're going to have to buy five. One for each of the kids, one for you, and one to keep in the plastic.
Yeah, that's right. dear.
And then you've got the adult,
need another job.
Adult colouring in books for the wife who's stressed out because you're spending all the money. I think it would be a great idea. Moving on, so we try and keep this as short as possible, which is never really short. Okay, so another thing that that is worth mentioning in the last. In the last couple of Fru issues, Dudley has made mention of the Fru Crew badge and how there's a bit of a competition where you write in some suggestions, ideas, feedback, things that can kind of be food for thought for Fru, there's a lot of F's there. They'll give a Fruit Crew badge to people who come up with a good idea. Now, I reckon automatically we should get one because we've been coming up with great ideas for like the last however long the X-Band, past 44 episodes. But yeah, I reckon this is a great idea. It encourages people to be able to give their feedback. My biggest concern is the fact that there's fans out there that have something to say, but they're too lazy to actually do it, whether it's feedback or a competition or something. So this gives them an incentive to be able to give whatever idea they've had, be it all been talking about on Facebook or whatever, to actually give it to Fru, so then they could actually use it or take it further. What do you guys reckon?
I reckon it's a great idea. And yes, I think we should all get a badge too. Oh, maybe I should just directly email them this podcast.
Yeah.
I do particularly like the tone that Dudley's taken with the way that he's writing these. It's very, self-deprecating and having a go, having a bit of fun. The award might look like this. That's one of those exciting things you pick up. I'm keen to pick up the next issue and go, well, have they decided what the award will actually look like? The fact that he's, talking about, oh, we can be bribed and we'll look favorably on that, and kids under the age of 18 are favored and we're biased. And, I think it's being done with a really positive tone and it just sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun and welcoming.
Yes. Mm.
It's not daunting. And I think in the past, Fru have kind of been feeling a bit like that. Like, I remember, I don't know about you guys, but before, when Jim was published, I sent in several letters, never got one of them published, never got an email or a response or anything like that. Nah, never. But, and I know heaps of other people that have been like that as well, where now it's like you're almost sending Dudley an email, okay, and then in brackets, PS, please don't publish this in a Fru comic. Because, they've gone totally 180, where it's like they're eager for people to communicate with them.
See, that's interesting, because my only experience with Jim was that he was really good about replying to any letters that I sent in, and I did have a couple published in forums.
Is that because you're a
my first one? Probably. I think my first one when I was 14, and I was absolutely chuffed. I went back to the newsagent, bought another two copies of that comic once I realised I'd been published, and I got a letter back from him only about 8 days before he died. Like the letter actually arrived at my house after I'd heard news of his death, and so that was a real bit of a moment for me. So I'm surprised to hear you say that maybe your reputation precedes you.
Well, it might be a WA thing.
but either way, Sydney. Oh, sorry, go on, Stephen.
I was just saying, he's over in WA, the envelope hasn't actually reached Sydney yet.
Still stuck on the nutter ball.
Yeah. But either way, I think that the way that Dudley's approaching this, as I say, on occasion strangers may shout, where'd you get it? It comes packaged with a warm, fuzzy feeling. You're not only a bona fide friend of the fandom, but you're also a friend of Fru. I think it's just so, as you say, welcoming, encouraging people to get involved. So I hope people take it up, and I hope that I start walking down the street and seeing the odd Fru Crew badge on people's lapels and collars.
Fair enough. Now, we have had a question. Someone has asked us a question, so we want to answer the question, and that was about the 80th anniversary issue. They wanted to know when it is coming out. Now, we don't have an exact date for Fru. I am led to believe that they are bringing a 80th anniversary issue out still. With Egmont, we have posted about that, and I believe it's October and or September, which is, I think it's going to be like the same comic for Sweden, Norway and Finland, I think it might be, but Regarding the Fruit issue, I don't have that information at the moment. Have you guys heard anything about that?
No, not a word.
Yeah. No, I haven't heard anything. I'm just a bit disappointed that, you know, ideally in a perfect world, and we all know there was dramas at the start of the year, but at the moment, as far as I'm concerned, it's 6 months late because we record this, you know, on today's the 15th of July. It was almost 6 months ago, or 5 months ago, that was the actual 80th birthday. And I was really hoping that we would have seen an 80th birthday issue released on or about the 17th of February. That was my real hopes. So as long as it comes out this year, that's good, but it's just a shame that it's taking so long.
Now, it's interesting you do make mention that ideally from your perspective, you would like to see it on the actual physical date. It's interesting in the sense that Egmont are releasing in October or September. And I asked Andreas about that, and they said the reason they're releasing it then is because traditionally that's when they make more sales because of to do with the weather and the holidays and the seasons and stuff like that, which makes sense. So I wonder if Fru is doing it for a similar reason on the back of the fact that, you know, they had a delayed start to the year. Like, maybe, you know, the spring holidays is going to be a better time than at the start of the year, which is just after Christmas, New Year's, you know, and it might be, it could almost get a little bit lost as well. So I wonder if that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, I hope so. I just, you know, your birthday is your birthday. If my birthday is on Boxing Day, I'm not going to be impressed with people who say, oh, I'm going to get you a present in a few months when I can afford it or whatever, you know. So anyway, that's a very personal point of view, and that's just where I was at with it.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that, but I would rather celebrate an 80th year, a whole year full of good stuff, rather than just the one day. My wife's got a joke that it's not a birthday for her, it's a birthday week. It's a birthday. So she has to celebrate her birthday for the whole week.
So she's probably one of these people who subscribe to the 12 days of Christmas present on every day sort of idea.
Is your wife the same, Stephen?
I won't go on record.
That's a yes. Okay, moving on. Okay, now, as some of you will know when you've been reading the website, there has been an 80th anniversary year comic released at the Dublin Comic Con, which I must admit is pretty exciting because for some of us who collect comics from around the world, this is actually going to be the first comic that's going to be produced in Ireland, first Phantom comic produced in Ireland.
That is interesting. We just have a map of Chronicle Chamber over in that area. I'd say in the United Kingdom, but Dublin's not part of the United Kingdom. Over in that part of the world.
Yeah. So, so all the information's on the website. Have you seen the cover for this?
I did. Where did I see that? Probably. Oh, we'll have seen it
on Chronicle Chamber.
On Chronicle Chamber.
I'm just trying to remember what it looked like. It was kind of like the Phantom stepping down from. Is that right?
Yeah, steps, and then you've got the profiles of past Phantoms are going along it. I love the feel of it. From the looks of it, it's going to be quite a thick comic. I think it's going to cost £5. I think from memory, it was what the price tag on the comic actually had. £5, which, well, depending on the state of the pound after BritEx, it could be, currently it's about double, it's about 50 cents for a pound. So it could be quite a thick comic, and there's a lot of people involved and a lot of Phantom stories, whether they're one or two pages or something. There's going to be a few Phantom pages and a few different artists. So I reckon it's a great idea.
Mm. What do you think of the title font?
Don't mind it. What are you writing?
Yeah, it's a bit like the American, but in italics, reverse italics, isn't it?
Yeah, they've just changed it just enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of get a blown up version of it. But
I certainly really like the image of it, you know, coming down the steps and into the vault, presumably, one of those sorts of rooms. And it is exciting to see how many stories they're looking at having included. So, we'll certainly have to talk to Joe and get him to cross the ditch and pick us up one when the Comic-Con's on.
Definitely. Okay, another new item. This is for the few of us that can actually have a little bit of extra money stashed away in their fandom kitty. So that is the new Bradford Exchange print. Now, who is getting this one?
Well, who's got money stashed away? Not me, dude.
Yes, I thought I had crickets then for a second.
We've got kids, so it won't be us. No.
That's typical of Bradford Exchange for me. Like they always just seem to be overpriced. I haven't got any Bradford Exchange stuff, and the way they go, I don't know that I ever will.
Yeah. Now, we have discussed this previously. Bradford Exchange is overpriced items, so we probably won't go there again. But what did you think about the actual print?
Oh, it looks beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. It does look beautiful. I've actually seen it in person because Bradford donated the first of however a number it was at the Phantom dinner. And it looks amazing, like, in when you actually look at it.
Big is it?
Probably A3-ish, maybe a little bit bigger. So it's a decent size.
And there's only 499 of them.
Yeah.
And is it the silver really, is it a metallic sort of a silver that pops out?
From memory, yeah, like it is impressive.
It's 59 centimetres by 48. So it's a decent size.
Yeah, it's a decent size.
That's bigger, is that bigger than
A3? Yeah.
It's a great piece, but yeah, there is a bit of a hefty price tag on the, unfortunately. Okay, something that doesn't have a hefty price tag on it is that there are a couple more Indian T-shirts out there that have been recently found and published on Facebook. Now, I am led to believe these are not licensed. I cannot confirm or deny that, but I have been told they are not licensed. Have you seen these T-shirts?
Yeah, I saw them on Facebook a little while ago.
Mm.
Yeah, now, I saw them. I suspect you might be right in terms of the licensing, because I couldn't help but notice that the image that was associated with one of them was a very surprised or excited Phantom face with, and I can't remember the exact wording now, but it was one of the more strong, you know, Phantom rough on roughnecks type sayings. And I seem to remember that image was the moment that the Phantom either learnt that Diana was pregnant or the moment that she said yes to the proposal question. So I liked the image. I love that image, but it was the wrong words to go with it, if you know what I mean. So I don't think that a licensed product would necessarily have mixed those up.
Mm. Now, are you two T-shirt guys or...?
They go out under my flannies, yeah.
No. All right, let me rephrase that so we don't get any more Friday dad jokes. Do you guys collect Phantom T-shirts, and if so, do you wear them or do you keep them?
I'm a big fella. They don't tend to fit me, so I don't actually own any at the moment.
I would have probably four or five, and they tend to be in a light rotation of wearing. They're certainly favourite shirts that I wear at particular times, but I'm also conscious of not putting them through the washing machine too often.
Washing machine at all.
By which to say, I do wash them every time I wear them, but I don't wear them too often because I don't want them to fade and all the rest of it.
Now, I must admit, I've probably got about 30, maybe 40 T-shirts, but I don't wear them. I'm one of those people that, you know, don't want to wear it because I don't want to ruin it. But I don't tend to, this is just me personally, but I'm not the type of person that's going to spend $30+ on a T-shirt, because I cannot see the reasoning behind spending that much money on a bit of fabric. So I probably won't be getting these ones, but I have got the sort of the previous Indian t-shirts that were released.
I struggle with the shirts a bit because they take up a lot of room if you want to display them. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to frame them, put them on the wall, or do you have a rack and hang them up in your skull cave if you're lucky enough to have the room to do that, or do they just get folded up and put in a cupboard and rarely looked at? So, yeah. If I'm not going to wear it.
Yeah. It's a brilliant that's a brilliant point that you raise. Now, I had the same problem, and for many years that they were just kind of shoved in a box. But then I was talking to a fan, John Cookson, which we all know of and most people will know of as well. And what he showed me a trick where you actually fold them around, you know, the cardboard and the bag that you put your comics in. So if you fold them around the backing board and put them in a slighter, bigger bag than what the board is, you can almost display them like a book, and you can stack them like a book as well. So if anyone doesn't quite picture what we're saying or something, feel free to shoot us a message and I'll send you a photo of what I'm talking about. But I've done that with all of my shirts, and you can kind of do it so the front picture that is on the front of the shirt is kind of central on the on the display piece. So you can display it, whether it's in a comic book stand, or you can stack them like a book, like books on a shelf and stuff. So
that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that.
Done with t-shirts. So it's just a way of getting around it. All right, guys, I reckon we have left the best for last, so hopefully you're still with us and listening on the podcast. Excuse some of the technical difficulties that we have had, but we want to talk about the Empty Throne.
Yes.
Boom, boom, yes, boom. The Empty
Throne. Now, for those, again, who want to get a bit of an idea of what we're talking about, we have put a post up on the 13th of July, and it is titled, "Is the 21st Phantom Dead?" Now, I must admit, I'm a little bit surprised that this has not been a bigger discussion amongst Phantom fans, both in Scandinavia but also in Australia, because
yes,
the 21st Phantom being dead is a big deal. So,
for the man who cannot die, to die, yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Now there's 4 points that I want to raise, and then we can have a bit of a discussion about it. So I'll let everyone read the article in their own time and all about that. But the 4 points that I have, now I've done a lot of research, I've kind of looked at what everyone's speculating about, and then I've actually kind of talked to some people and looked at the panels and the drawings and the translations and stuff that's kind of out there. And first thing is this is not a what-if storyline. Now, this is the first major confusion that most people have, is that they just see it as like a what-if story, as a, you know, it's going to be three parts, and then it's, you know, it will kind of sort itself out, and it will be kind of like, you know, something that isn't really official or part of Egmont lore or canon. But I can confirm this is not a what-if storyline. It is happening, and this ongoing storyline will actually be part of the official Egmont lore / canon. Number two, this is happening in the future. It is not happening now. It is in the future. Number three, the 21st Phantom is still alive in 2016, today's current Phantom world. So all new stories that are being produced by Egmont that are in today's current time will be featuring the 21st Phantom. However, these stories are going to be happening in the future, which are not going to be featuring the 21st Phantom, but are going to be mainly focused around Kit and Heloise and whether they take on the baton or not. And that comes to me at number four. That is if it is going to be a passing of the baton, so i.e. if we are going to see the 21st Phantom die and the 22nd Phantom happen, it is going to be very, very slow, which it's going to be a slow process, which will be able to keep the Focus happy, because it will give them time to acclimatise to their worst fear, which are the 22nd Phantom happening.
They're going to need to make it so slow that all the Focusts have the chance to die themselves before this happens, if you want to keep them happy.
Yes, very much like that. A bit like if you want to boil a frog. You put it in cold water and you slowly bring it to the boil. You don't put the frog straight in boiling water. It is going to be very much similar as that. So what do you guys, Steve, I'll let you go first. What do you think about this whole concept? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Would you like to see it happen full time? Or what do you reckon? Or do you have any questions?
No, I think you've kind of answered any questions. Like, seeing it in the future, it's not set now. So this could be in any time in the future. And looking at the artwork, Kit and Heloise, very much they're adult. Like, you look at the picture of Kit there in front of the scale throne, and you know he's got biceps coming out of the
out of his biceps.
Yeah, he's got biceps like tree trunks. Okay, yeah. So
he's ready to be Phantom.
Yeah, they're mature people. So this is like, I see this like 10 years in the future at least in comic timeline, which is 100 years in normal time. So I see it, it's not really an alternative universe, it's a future universe. And I like the fact that it's a storyline within a publication, within Egmont Publication, they've got out the normal storyline, which is going on at the moment, and we've got 21st Phantom, who's just been battling zombies with Nat Turner, and I think the next issue that we're going to see anyways, to do with the Sing, I think I read that somewhere.
Yep, that's correct.
So he's still doing his thing here. But now they're going to incorporate this, and I'll call it a future universe, and publish that. And if we had Joe on the show, he'll be saying that Marvel and DC have done much the same thing with their publications, like Spider-Man, I think it was a 2099 or something like that. So it's a Spider-Man set in the future. There was, I remember 20 years ago, there was a Batman set in the future. So it's this sort of thing has been done before. I don't know how much success those publications have met with, and I don't know how much success this will be met with. However, reading it in the vein of being a future universe and not the current universe, I don't mind it. I don't know. Yeah, am I scared or nervous? I don't know. I'm interested is probably the best word. How's
fair
that?
Enough. Yeah. What do you reckon, Dan?
I don't like it. yes, I'm nervous because I like the Egmont stories to a point. I respect the fact that they try to keep the Phantom story moving forward. And we've talked before about Lamanda Lager no longer being president, and in fact we've gone through two or three presidents since then in the Egmont series, and those sorts of things. What I get nervous about, I guess, in terms of this being a future universe, you used the word lore or canon there, Jermaine, and that this will be Phantom lore as far as Egmont are concerned. If this is a future universe, and yeah, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, whatever, however far it is into the future, we must get to that future. That's what happens with the future. We get to it. And so what they're doing is they're preempting stories that could well take place, years from now. In terms of boiling the frog and that slow process, I think this is the wrong way to go about it. I think what you need to do is you need to... I mean, I'm on the record as saying that I do think we need to move towards a 22nd Phantom. I don't like the idea. I'm going to miss Hero. I'm going to miss Devil. I'm going to miss Diana. All of those classic characters. But there's an excitement with what's going on with the next Phantom. There is an anticipation there. But I do think this is the wrong way to go about it. I think to move towards a 20-second Phantom...
So you're ripping the Band-Aid off fast?
No, no, not at all. I'd still boil the frog, so to speak, but I think what you'd need to do is have a series of stories showing the current Phantom aging. I think you show the current Phantom slowing down a little bit. Maybe he's taking a few more hits when it comes to fighting the Sing and all the rest of it. And we're seeing in the current stories that the twins are getting older. Maybe we need to...
And that's happening in the dailies as well, isn't it? The twins are getting older.
That's exactly right. And we didn't need a future universe of, what might happen if the Phantom gets married? That was a gradual process of courting between Phantom and Diana, then there was the engagement process, and then there was the marriage. We didn't need what if the Phantom had kids? There was a gradual working towards that. I'd rather see them gradually progressing the storyline rather than have these snapshots into the future of here's where we're definitely going and then we don't know how we get there. So I think that would work better to progress this way.
Now, you're assuming, because obviously we're not Egmont, so we're not the brains trust all creating these stories, but you're assuming that Egmont doesn't know where they're heading. For all we know, they could have a 5-year plan which has said, okay, we're going to start here and then we're going to be creating the new stories featuring the Phantom with him aging quicker than what he has in the last 80 years, and then the twins aging quicker to get to this point in X amount of years or something. So,
maybe that's partly why they've engaged Henrik Johnson as the artist recently, because he does tend to draw what looks like an older Phantom, and that's certainly been a criticism on some levels that he's starting to look more ragged and all the rest of it. That's part of the aging process. How old do we think the 21st Phantom is now? Even in the official, would he be 45? Would he be 50? He's got to be slowing up. He's got to be looking older.
So I was thinking.
Well, the twins are 15.
Yeah, I think he's sort of stuck at 30 for a long time. But like you say, the twins are 15, 16, so therefore he must be, 40, 45? I don't know.
He'll be at least...
I don't like this... Sorry?
He'll be at least in his late 30s.
And I'm in my late 30s, and there's no way that I'm keeping up with all of the bad guys these days. he probably does a few more sit-ups than I do.
He's had 30-odd years of jungle training. You've lived up in Queensland.
It's much the same.
That does not qualify as training. But I guess what you're saying is you would rather see the progression but not actually jump to the future straight away, which is kind of what we're doing.
It's like a spoiler. I don't understand why they feel the need to do this rather than, I do think there needs to be a master plan. I hope someone has got a master plan. And you said before that I'm assuming the Egmont doesn't have that. I really genuinely hope that they do and that it's all mapped out. And if they're professionals and good at their jobs, then they have that. So they know what's going on. I don't know why. Yeah, as I say, I think this is the wrong way to boil the frog slowly. I think that just progressing the current Phantom's timeline would be more effective.
Would you have preferred if they did a story like this set in the future, that it was a what if story, or you just don't like anything like that? You just want to see it progress.
I like the old Moz can see the future and here's a maybe. Maybe if there was some sort of old Moz has had a dream and here's a possible prediction of the future, and that's an interesting thing. I don't mind that. But to lock it in and say that this is definitely canonical, it's going to be lore, and these are stories that the 22nd Phantom will write down in their chronicles. I don't know about that.
Yeah, fair enough. I reckon they're doing it like this to basically acclimatise Focus, But let me also, that's why I reckon it's like this. Let me also say that, which I've actually talked about in this article, is that Fru has, in the past and recently, said that they will not be publishing parts stories scattered throughout like they did with the first couple of Nat Turner Spirit parts. So with that in mind, Fru readers, I would doubt we will see these stories, which will be coming out in August in Egmont. I doubt we will be seeing them until probably this time next year, I reckon. And if we do see them, it will probably be one part, then two part, and then the third part, because from what I understand is that these are going to be scattered throughout the Egmont publishing schedule.
So is this like a three-part story? It's not an ongoing...
Well, it's the first part is three parts, and then...
So is the thought, like, stuff. The two or three pages that we've seen seem to be, oh, no one knows where the Phantom is, he's been gone for a year, I guess one of you two is going to have to step up and be the Phantom for a bit until he comes back. So there's still that mystery about where he is he dead, all that sort of stuff.
We'll probably be exploring that.
Yeah, and is your perception that by the end of the three parts, we have an answer to where the 21st Phantom is, or by the end of the three parts, we know what the arrangement is going to be regarding the 22nd Phantom, whether it's Kid or Heloise or a job sharing arrangement, or is that the point of these three parts?
To be honest, I'm not sure, and I would hope it's not all solved with a bow tied around the oak tree at the end of the third part. I would hope that it would be kind of like Phantom 2040, where the first three parts are kind of going to be kind of like the introductory, set up the storyline, get a little bit of an idea of how this is going to play out, and then we'll probably, this is how I would like to see it, get a couple, whether it's four or five stories every year of the adventures of this. So it's, and I expect it to be as similar as the Phantom 2040, where the Phantom becomes the Phantom and then he has his own adventures, but then there's the bigger arc, which is what happened to his dad, and he uncovers clues about what happened, and I kind of hope that's what happens with Kit and Heloise and Guran and everyone else as well. That's how I would like to see it.
Would you like to see them discover that he's still alive, or would you like to see him gone?
Now, I've been on record, but I reckon the 21st Phantom needs to die. And I reckon the sooner they do it, probably the better, because...
Yeah, I'm in disagreement. I'd much prefer to keep him alive, but...
Yeah, no, I reckon we need to hurry up and move him on.
I certainly can't see him sitting in his rocking chair out on the veranda of the treehouse, looking out to say, oh, yes, I agree. You know, one of the problems with the Billy Zane Phantom movie was the Patrick McGoohan character. Once the father of the Phantom dies, that's it, he's dead. You can go to the crypt and you can... speculate about what they might say, and you can hear the whispers of the ghosts, but he shouldn't actually be there. So when the 21st Phantom is killed, I agree with you, Jermaine, he needs to be dead.
Yeah, and it needs to be celebrated, like, because
yes,
the 21st Phantom will probably go down as one of the most celebrated Phantoms of, you know, probably all of them. And, you know, because like, you look at the Phantoms, you've got the first Phantom for obvious reasons. Then you've got the sixth Phantom for bringing the Jungle Patrol in. Then you've and then you've got the 19th, which was the strongest of all. You've got the 17th because he was the twin. So you've got these key Phantom figures throughout history. The 21st will be, when he does die, or if he does die, he is going to be the granddaddy of all of the Phantoms. He's going to be the man.
Of course. I mean, his chronicles in the Chronicle Room are probably half of the volumes that are in there. just the volume of stories that we've had about him. I'm worried about it. That's all.
But the other thing that kind of gets me is the fact that no one's really discussing it, and I wonder. Now I've got a few little theories about that. I reckon one of the reasons is because they just see it as a what if story. And so on one part, they're just like, oh, it's not really going to affect us. It'll be kind of like a futuristic type of fan, and it'll be a good story, and then we can just get back to our own little cozy little world. And then the other side of me thinks that the reason why no one's really kicking up a fuss is, one, because it's not in a free comic yet. The news has come from Egmont and most of the Australian readers. Now, I'm saying most, I'm stereotyping here, so I'm sorry if I offend anyone, but most Australian readers just don't give a stuff about what happens in Scandinavia. They think that, half of them probably think that through actually create the stories themselves. You know, like... somewhere that doesn't concern them. It's, you know, so I think that might be another reason why a lot of people are not really worried about it or raising concerns or excited about it, because they don't see it affecting their fandom.
If you can get Andreas or somebody from over there to give us a frame-by-frame translation of all the speech bubbles and what have you, so we can actually understand what's going on in these little tidbits.
Maybe there's a lot of people who still wouldn't know anything about it. It is surprising, yeah. I agree, that there hasn't been more conjecture on Facebook. Like, you wrote a pretty provocative article there, and the teaser that you gave it on Facebook was even more so, and you got, what, 4 comments? So that does surprise me, that more people... But I guess, as Stephen said, once it's in a fruit comic and once it's in newsagents, that's when you'll really get the feel for how people are feeling about it.
I think you're right. I think when it... Yeah, I think you're right. It's when it will actually come up and people are reading it, that's when fruit will get all the hate mail.
Yeah.
Yes, I know we need to watch our language here, but that's when the... it will hit the fan. With a PH. Does that help?
I will try and get a frame-by-frame translation of the first 2 pages. I think it's definitely going to be a watch this space. It'll be interesting to... because obviously the Egmont readers will get this before us. So it will be interesting what their feedback will be as well, because it might give us a little bit of an indication of what the Australian through feedback will be. All right, guys, thank you for that. So we better wrap up. It's been probably another long episode. Just want
to
let everyone...
It's hard to keep these short, isn't it?
Especially the probably one of those. These ones go for a while.
So
thank you for listening to us. As normal with most of the wrap-ups, we have Patreon, which is the place where you can basically just help the costs for the X-Band podcast, Chronicle Chamber website, etc., etc. I think we actually asked Joe basically what the costs are for a year, basically, you know, what it costs to keep everything running up, and a rough figure was excess of $300 Australian a year. So, which you're looking at a signature series through subscription and stuff like that. So every little cent helps. It doesn't go to our fandom collection. It basically goes to running of everything, including, you know, I think we've brought some software for recording and stuff like that, and also for hosting of the website, hosting of podcasts and stuff. So for those who have given, we thank you for that. We've got all the social links.
It's not hard to do. Just go to chroniclechamber.com. There's a link to Patreon in the top right-hand corner there. And, you know, as you say, Jeremy, $1 a month. If half the people who listen to the podcast chipped in $1 a month, then it wouldn't all be coming out of Joe's pocket. And I think given that he doesn't have a job and he's trying to find a house and he's living with a pound, he'd appreciate that.
Exactly. So, and also on the website, you've got our social links. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, everything else, Twitter and all that. Don't forget to put a review on iTunes about us. All positives, 5 stars, we're the best. And and then, someone, if you can put that you miss Joe or something on there or something, because Joe's feeling a little bit lost that we're doing so well without him. So if someone can maybe put a comment on Facebook or on Twitter or iTunes that you miss Joe, he will really appreciate that. So that will be all from us. We just want to say thank you for listening to us, for sitting through us, and hopefully you will enjoy everything we've talked about. Keep reading those comics. Don't forget to send in all your feedback to Fru, especially about colour and the Fru crew badge and everything else. Happy reading, and I was about to say, may the force be with you, but that's not the Phantom, is it? So what will be the Phantom sign off? That's all, folks.
Cheers, everyone.
See you later.
Yeah, no, I didn't understand any of what you just said in that last sentence, Jerm.
Already done something like this? So are they developing it, or are they just in the process of getting them from Egmont? You got any word on that?
Yeah, that's...
Jermaine?
Oh, we've lost him.
I thought he was too quiet.
I wonder how long ago.
Oh, dear.
What's going to be Chota's next move? Is the Davidson expedition safe from further attack? Will the outlaws be able to disband the safari? Don't miss The Man Who Never Dies, the next exciting episode of The Phantom, at this theater next week.